Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Around the Corner podcast. I'm your host, Matt Dallas. I have with me Mr. Brian Heminger. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's good to be back. Got a bit of a change-up going on here with the podcast.
Yeah, so unfortunately, Matt Schlichting has decided to just kind of step back from doing the podcast. He's been pretty busy, just had a lot going on, and decided that over the course of the off-season and stuff, just now was not a great time to be focusing on putting out some podcast content for you guys. But we thought it was important to keep it going. Matt will certainly be missed. We loved having him around on the podcast. I'm a longtime listener myself, really enjoyed listening to him. So he will certainly be missed, but the show must go on, as they say, and we've got some good prospect type news to talk about for you guys, primarily with the Arizona Fall League and the Rule 5 draft. So we're going to kick it off with some AFL action. The big news obviously being Kyle Manzardo and Chase DeLauder had really, really banner years out there. Brian, do you want to kind of talk about that a little bit for me?
Yeah. So for those that aren't aware, Manzardo was the player that Cleveland got back in the Aaron Civale trade. It was a straight up one for one. So he needs to be good or it wasn't a good trade. He is a first base prospect. That's about the only position he plays, first base DH, and really loud hitting tools. And we got to see brief flashes at the end of last season. He was injured when we acquired him, but then he got activated with Columbus and looked like he recovered from his shoulder injury and played really well down the stretch, hit a lot of home runs, and that carried over into the AFL. During his stretch in the AFL, he was a bit of a powerhouse. And in 22 games, he slashed 272, 340 with a 565 slugging, was near the tops in the AFL in home runs with 6. I think the league leader was 7. Knocked in 19 RBIs, walked 9 times to 22 strikeouts. Just overall rock solid and kind of made up for some lost time because he struggled a little bit in the beginning last year at AAA. But then after he got sent to Cleveland, he looked really good. And then he looked amazing in the AFL. And people are really excited about him heading into spring training next year. I think there's a very realistic chance he makes the club right out of spring training and is playing alongside Naylor every day at first base and DH.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say we're still getting down the cadence a little bit, folks. With Manzardo, I think one of the things I remember early on was that he only got like a 40 raw power grade from, I think it was Fangraphs or Pipeline or one of them. Mm-hmm. And he proved that wrong with a 470 foot blast followed up by a 440 foot blast in the same game. So clearly the power tool is there. And I think the big thing that they like about him is if you look at his batted ball profile, it is all pull and all fly balls. Dude's just yanking fly balls in the air. And that's the Jose Ramirez formula to get to power when you don't necessarily have the big raw power grade necessarily. His in-game power ability is absurd, just with his batted ball profile. So he's a guy that's exciting to watch. It's hard not to let the comparisons and the expectations run wild with him, to be sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing that stood out to me was really loud exit velocities, and he just wasn't always getting the launch angle he needed. So it seems like he's really turning the corner there. And if he does get that sorted out in terms of getting that ball in the air a little bit more, a lot of those doubles that he's been hitting are going to be turning into home runs. So that's what really gets me excited. Like, I legitimately think he has a good shot at winning Rookie of the Year next year if he stays healthy.
Oh, absolutely.
And the thing that's really exciting about it is because he's a highly ranked prospect, we could get the Julio Rodriguez effect where it's a new rule, but if you are a top like 100 consensus prospect across the board, I think on multiple different prospect lists, and he is, and you make the team out of spring training and then you win Rookie of the Year, you get a first round pick extra in the next draft.
Right, and you like, get it before the normal compensation picks. It's like pick 31. It's like immediately after.
So like Seattle got it because of Julio Rodriguez. It kind of encourages teams not to, you know, punish players for being good by manipulating service time. So, and he's good enough that I don't think that they should. And I think he has a legitimate chance to do that. So Cleveland has had
there's
so
not
many
a lot
guys.
Of, I was going to say, there's not a lot of top prospects right now at the, like at the very top of the prospect ranking list that are close to MLB ready. It's a lot of like A ball and double A ball guys with high ceilings. So he could be potentially like one of the guys that's in maybe a little bit of a weaker rookie of the year class of guys that played for a whole season. So just by nature of him opening the season with the team, if he does what he's capable of doing, he'll be in the running for sure with a really good shot at winning it.
Yeah, last year was an absolutely loaded rookie class, and Tanner Bibee got second. And Cleveland has consistently had guys in the top like four or five in the rookie of the year for like the past decade. They just can't win it. I think Manzardo has a legit shot to do that.
Agreed.
And then the other position player that everybody was raving about was Chase DeLauder. Now, he was our first round pick in 2022. He didn't play the year we drafted him, was recovering from some foot issues, and that stemmed over into last season. He didn't end up making his debut until the middle of the season. And when he started playing, he was unbelievable. Just put up banana stats at high A. Lake County ended up getting a late promotion to double A. OPS like well over 900 all season, batting average in the 350s all season, hit for power, hit for average, just did a little bit of everything. He was sensational. But because he had a shortened season, they let him continue on into the AFL to keep getting those reps. And let's just say that DeLauder stood out. He also played a similar amount of games. I think he played 23 games in the Arizona Fall League. And he slashed 299, 385, 529. So five home runs compared to six for Manzardo. And I know it's a garbage stat, but he led the AFL in runs batted in with 27. So he also walked 14 times compared to 11 strikeouts. So
you always love a guy that strikes, that walks more than he strikes out. That's huge. And with DeLauder, the tools are just so loud. So the question that I'm sure everybody's asking with him, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, Brian, is the swing is a little funky, right?
Yes.
And it's really just the follow through, right? Because the bat to like shoulder to ball, he's fine. It's once he gets through the path. For you, what do you like? Does anything about his swing worry you as he gets to the next levels?
Well, at the current rate I'm at, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And he's kind of got what they call like this kind of scissor swing, where it kind of has this kind of goofy follow through where the bat kind of just pushes up after he hits the ball. And it looks funky, but I mean, he just crushes the ball and makes consistent loud contact every time. Like, it could just be one of those things where it works for him. I don't know if it'll keep working, but so far, so good. I mean, he dominated high A. He dominated in a brief stint in double A. And then he goes to the AFL and is one of the best hitters in the entire AFL. Had a 914 OPS. So, like, he looks legit. Like, he is leapfrogging everybody in Cleveland's minor league system in terms of the outfield, and they have some decent outfielders on the way. And just absolutely dominated, like as good as I thought Manzardo was. I thought DeLauder was even better in the AFL. So I mean, this is wild, and he's knocking on that door too, so we'll get to that a little bit later.
I mean, hey, Hunter Pence made a lot of money playing baseball with a pretty funky swing in his own right. So
yep.
if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think I agree with you 100% on that, especially because, like you said, the exit velocities are there and he's not swinging and missing. So what's the issue? You know, like what would be the thing that you're hoping to achieve? I mean, he could probably afford to hit the ball in the air a little bit more. But I don't know if that's a result of it, like his weird follow through or not, you know?
Yeah. And until it starts affecting him negatively at like as he goes up higher, I'm not messing with it. Like if he's still doing it against AAA and then major league level talent, just let him do his thing.
Yep. And with how he performed in the minors this year, it's not crazy to think that had he made his season debut at the beginning of the year like everybody else and wasn't hurt, that he could have been knocking on the door of AAA with, you know, rumblings that he'd make the team out of camp going into this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I was clamoring for him to make double A like a month before they finally promoted him to double A.
Well, I mean, when you're hitting
And
360 at Lake County.
yeah, like he just never had a bad stretch when he was down there. And then he got promoted and he didn't slow down there either. Like he actually improved his walk rate and his strikeouts went way down because he was, being a lot more selective. And like that just kind of shows that he just has a really advanced feel for hitting. So this is a guy that we should really be excited about as long as he can stay healthy. Just keep praying to those baseball gods. No more foot injuries for Chase DeLauder.
Absolutely. There's a lot of prospects that you get in your systems and, you know, you start to fall in love with them because they're your guys and you maybe have a tendency to overrate them a little bit. You know, guys that are maybe, you know, a couple, two, three win players and you start to think, oh, maybe they could be stars. DeLauder is one of those guys that is a premier talent in the minor leagues. There was rumblings that he might have even been able to go first overall in the draft had he not been injured in and played in the small conference's senior season. I mean, he's that talented.
Yeah, he's wonderful, and he could be, the solution to a lot of Cleveland's problems. I mean, we've got the infield kind of locked down. We got catcher, we've got first base, we got second base, we got third base, we've got like eight guys vying for shortstop. So that's all kind of going to sort itself out. It's outfield that's the big problem. We got Stephen Kwan, and then we're just not quite sure for everything else. If Chase DeLauder continues to do what he's doing, I mean, he could be ready to go at some point next year and then could be ready to start the season with the team 2024 or 2025. So, it makes Cleveland's issues on what they need to do with free agents a lot easier if they don't have to commit to something long term because they've got this guy coming. So.
Absolutely. So let me ask you this. Is he a guy that you think could handle center field, or is he someone that projects more as a corner guy?
I think he could be center. I mean, he's not like a massive burner. He is pretty quick. I mean, he stole, I think, five bases in the AFL. And I think he could play center field, but in terms of bat profile, I mean, he would fit in just fine in a corner outfield as well.
Gotcha. So center field would be gravy for him, but you're more than content putting him at a corner spot.
I would honestly, if Stephen Kwan can do it, I would be ecstatic to have him at center because his bat is more of a typical, prototypical center fielder, the guy that leads off, gets on base, steals bases, draws walks, just does his thing. And then you could have, DeLauder as a corner guy, maybe George Valera as a corner guy, maybe a Jonathan Rodriguez, Oscar, whoever, Brennan, any of those guys. We've got a lot of potential to fill all those spaces, but I think a lot of our problems would be solved if Kwan could move to center, but I don't know, like back-to-back gold gloves and left, it's kind of tough to want to move somebody from there.
There's a part of me that thinks with how unwilling they've been to do it, that if they were going to do it, they'd have done it by now. You know, I agree with you 100%. I think he would make so much sense in center field, but it seems like they've just got an aversion to putting him out there, and I'm not sure. Maybe with Vogt, you know, a new perspective, but I'm sure a lot of that comes from the front office anyway, but who knows? So apart from the position players, which that was what everybody was talking about, what all the attention was on, what Twitter was focused on, the Guardians did have two pretty solid pitching prospects that played pretty well in the AFL. I think we should probably talk about them a little bit. First off is Ryan Webb, the AFL strikeout leader. Brian, you were telling me a little bit about him pre-show that he was a guy that dealt with some injuries. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, he was a fourth round pick, I think, in the 2021 draft. I believe it was the year we got Tanner Bibee. And in that season, he was recovering from Tommy John surgery. And when he debuted, he didn't debut until about halfway through the season, had some flashes of brilliance. And then last year, he was looking really good. And then he got hurt. And then he ended up coming back late in the season. But he missed a good chunk of last year with some injuries. But in the end of the season, he still was one of the top Cleveland pitchers in the minor leagues in FIP, I believe. I think he had ended up about fourth in out of all minor league starting pitchers for Cleveland that played full season with a 393. So that's actually pretty impressive, all things considered. And had a was third in the team in the organization out of starting pitchers in batting average against, was third in WHIP, and was second in ERA. So I mean, he still had a very good season, despite having an injury. So they decided to let him, get some extra reps in the Arizona Fall League. And a couple things really stood out, in terms of, you mentioned it, strikeout leader. He pitched in 22 point and two thirds innings, 36 strikeouts. I mean, that's for a starting pitcher, especially, that's ridiculous. So, he had six more strikeouts than any other pitcher. He did, he was a starter, so he pitched a little bit more innings than anybody else, but still the ratio stayed ahead of everybody else too. So, I mean, that's elite. Like that's, that's primo reliever numbers for strikeouts.
Yep, he was second in the entire AFL in strikeouts per nine innings with 14.29, which
Wow.
is absurd.
Yeah. And he was near the top of the AFL in batting average against, 198. So he actually improved. And this is a hitter's league. This is a league where mostly you send all your top position player prospects to get to show off. And that's what, Manzardo and Dellauder were out doing, just crushing everybody.
In the
And
hot,
meanwhile,
thin mountain air, too.
where you're going to give up more home runs. And 198 batting average against. Like the only thing going against Webb, was the walks.
Well,
He did
notably,
struggle.
with the 198 batting average against, he only had a 310 BABIP against. So it's not like he was getting lucky. I mean, that's just kind of accurately how he performed, is about a 198 batting average against.
So yeah, this is a guy that's hard to hit, strike, misses bats. So really exciting that he had a very strong AFL performance. Yeah, the only thing that stood out negatively was he did have some walks. I mean, 14 walks in 22 and two thirds innings is not good, but considering how many bats he was missing and he was consistently going out there against really good patient hitters, and he's never even pitched at Double A yet. Like last year he pitched at High A, so. Considering that he has not even faced, Double A or Triple A hitters, and he was facing some of the best prospects in baseball, the performance he had was elite. So I'm really excited about what he can do next year. He's definitely somebody to keep an eye out for in the 2024 season.
Yep, and this is a stat that I sometimes look at with pitchers with a similar profile to him, that are guys that are maybe more strikeout artists, shall we say. I remember, I hate bringing him up, but Trevor Bauer used to have this issue where he'd pitch great, he'd give up no runs on five hits and eight strikeouts, but he couldn't make it through the fifth inning because he was throwing 25 pitches an inning. Webb only threw 15 pitches an inning at about 3.5 per batter. For a guy that's striking a lot of guys out, that's a really efficient mark. And I mean, that's over a 90 inning sample size. That's pretty substantial, right? That's about 10, 15 starts. For me, that indicates a guy, just in the pitchers I've worked with, like the guys that can get outs, like can go and kind of paint the corners a little bit and get and induce weak contact while still getting strikeouts and not let their pitch count inflate. That to me shows a guy that's got a potential to make it as a starting pitcher long term. And given that he's close, I mean, he looks like he's 24 years old. He'll turn 25 at the beginning of the season next year. He's a guy that could rocket through the system fairly quickly, with a full year of health under his belt.
Yeah, I think he was a college senior when they drafted him, and then he was recovering from the Tommy John. So he is a little bit delayed on the development compared to some of the other guys. Like Bybee was healthy and dominated and just shot through the system. So him and Williams. So, this is definitely a guy that has the potential to get there. So
And as an anecdote, his player picture looks identical to Justin Masterson. So just go on minorleaguebaseball.com and take a look at Ryan Webb's player picture and tell me I'm wrong. But anyway, who is so we had one other pitcher in the AFL, and I started resorting my stat sheet here and lost him, and it was Ross Carver.
Ross Carver, he was the pitcher we got back in the Carlos Vargas trade with Arizona. Like, we sent them Vargas, we got back a starting pitcher that was expected to start the year last year at Double A. He didn't really have a very good season last year. He pitched 21 games, 17 starts. ERA was 6.50, WHIP was 1.49. Like, there really wasn't anything that stood out a ton, other than that he was striking out a decent amount, 88 and 75 innings. But I thought he had a decent performance in the AFL again, considering it's an offensive focused league. Had an ERA of 4.50 and struck out 21 in 18 innings pitched, so kind of maintained that strikeout rate. So, nothing real crazy, but it was an improvement over what he did at Double A last year. Like, I don't really think he dealt with any injuries really, or if he did, they weren't like significant. He just kind of was a space filler at Double A last year. He wasn't really threatening to get promoted or anything, but maybe there's still some potential there. There's a reason Cleveland traded for him, so.
Fair enough. And this is as anecdotal of a stat as you can find, but a little fun fact for you. If he made the major leagues, he'd be the second player from Benton High School in Arkansas to make the major leagues, the other being former Cleveland Indian Cliff Lee.
Oh, okay. That is,
Well,
I like
fun
that
fact for you.
anecdote. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, hey, those Benton, Arkansas guys, man. But yeah, I mean, with Carver, looking at his numbers throughout his career, he looks like the kind of guy that they picked up because, they probably saw some sort of peripheral that they liked and thought that maybe, hey, if we get him in here, who knows what we can do with the pitching factory and churn out something out of him. So, I'd be interested to see what his 2024 looks like after a full offseason in the Guardians pitching development. Going like the fact that they sent him to the AFL means they're trying to get him to go work on something, I'd imagine. So he's the kind of guy that I'd be interested to see what he can do, especially given, I mean, he's a career 10.4 strikeouts per nine guy in the minor league so far across 3 seasons. So he's clearly got some swing and miss stuff. The walk numbers are pretty high. I mean, he walked, what was it, like close to five batters per nine innings this year in the minors. And he gave up the long ball at a pretty high rate as well. So I mean I'd be interested to see how next year goes for him. He could be someone to keep an eye on, but maybe not someone who I'm putting all the eggs in that basket, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And last year was his first full season at Double A. Like, he in 2022, he kind of spent about, I would say, a third of the end of the season at Double A. And he had a 9.50 ERA at Double A that year. He had a good high A. He was 3.10 and earned the promotion. So what's hilarious is, the 6.15 ERA that he had at Double A was actually an improvement.
Hey, it keeps improving at that rate eventually. I
Yeah.
mean,
Maybe get it down to four this year, and then, by the time he makes the majors, he'll be, rookie of the year. So.
there you go. I'm at the point where if the Guardians acquire a pitcher, my ears perk up at this point. I've seen it happen too many times to where this guy where you go, who? And then all of a sudden he's, Tanner Bibee, third round pick, and the next year he's rookie of the year,
Yep.
So that's I think everybody of note that was in the AFL. If there were other guys that
Yes.
were missing, I think, yeah, that sounds about right. So with that, I think now would be a good time to kind of pivot to the Rule 5 draft. Now they did protect Daniel Espino, they did
Yep.
protect Jonathan Rodriguez. And there was one other guy that they protected whose name's escaping me.
Cade Smith,
Cade
reliever.
Smith. That's right. So they protected those guys, and they did leave a few notable guys unprotected. I do think we have a tendency sometimes to overstate the likelihood that someone will get picked in the Rule 5 draft. I mean, most teams don't even pick a guy every year. So we'll see what happens. But there were a couple names that were notable. So Brian, why don't you fill us in on who those are?
Yeah, so for those that aren't aware of how the Rule 5 works, whenever you draft somebody out of college or high school or sign them internationally, it starts a countdown. And if you sign somebody that's like 16 years old, it's like more of a 4 or 5 year countdown. You draft a high schooler, same thing. And then if you draft a college player, it's a shorter countdown, like 3 years or something. So basically, they have a set amount of time to progress through the system and then be added to your team's 40-man roster. And if they hit that deadline and they are not onto your 40-man roster, another team can draft them out of your minor league system and then add them. And then they have to be on your major league roster all season. So that's the, like, they don't just have to put you on the 40-man, they have to be on your 26-man and stay there. And if they get sent back down to the minors at any point all year, you lose them. So notably, Cleveland lost Anthony Santander. That's by far our worst Rule 5 loss in that I can think of. And then Cleveland got Trevor Stephan from the Yankees, notably, who has had a pretty good, by far our best Rule 5 pick that we've ever had. So you can get some important players through that. And last year, I think Cleveland lost one or two players, but they got returned. So because
Yeah, it
if
was two relievers whose names I can't remember.
yeah, I know he got diagnosed with cancer like right after they drafted him. Like it was really weird. Like but he did end up coming back and pitching for Cleveland. They also previously had lost like Luis Oviedo in the Rule 5, and then he returned as a free agent actually. Yeah,
Was
it's
Luis
kind of weird. Yeah.
Oviedo, was he the one that was like number nine in the around the corner prospect list? And every week we kept doing a check-in with him, and it just kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
Like we're waiting for it to turn around, and it just never did.
Yeah, he had like one brilliant season where he exploded up into like the top 10 rankings on everybody's list, and then the follow-up season he struggled, then got hurt repeatedly, and then got hurt and finished the year on the injured list and never made it back to relevance, and then got drafted in the Rule 5. So, but yeah, he was at like AAA last year. So, I mean, he still is a guy that could potentially impact Cleveland down the stretch. They just needs to kind of turn that corner. But
For sure.
yeah, in terms of who Cleveland could lose, there's a few notable names. The biggest ones that stand out are the premier draft picks. So you look at guys like Ethan Hankins and Lenny Torres Jr. They were both first round picks out of high school. And they both had Tommy John surgery. So, they both lost a significant amount of development time due to recovering from injuries. So they both really impressed when they were young and before they got hurt, and neither of them have really impacted since coming back. They've both struggled a little bit with control. They both are throwing in the upper 90s again. They're just trying to kind of get sorted out. Like Torres, it looks like they've converted to kind of a closer role at the minors. So he had some flashes last year, but I think he didn't go any higher than high A at any point. And Hankins, I think, got up to double A, but he also did not pitch much last year, was still dealing with some other injuries. But it looks like they're trying to keep him as a starter. So he's the one I would say I'm most worried about losing in terms of potential. Like somebody, I still get goosebumps watching his performance as a Team USA, under 18, like just dominating like Japan.
Oh yeah, he waves at the guys as they strike out. in that video. It's
Yeah.
unbelievable.
Like he was insane during that. And I think that that's still there. It's just, are we going to get enough time to work with him and let that pitching factory, get him back fully from the Tommy John surgery? Because last year was kind of his first like real time that he got to showcase a little bit.
Yeah, worth noting that from about July 29th on, he made somewhere in the realm of about, looks like seven starts, and he allowed only five earned runs in what looks like 29 innings of work. So he started out like rough. I mean, he had
He struggled.
back to back starts, like one where he was like couldn't get out of the second inning, gave up eight runs, walked a bunch of guys. But the strikeout stuff was still there for sure. The velocity is still there. And this is a guy that was in the conversation to go first overall in the draft. Like he was the preeminent favorite to go first in the draft going into that season. And he slipped because of some injury concerns. But I mean, the tools are still there. But there's a chance a team, like we were saying, might try and pull a Santander, maybe do something where a team that's not in contention stashes him as a reliever. And puts them in low leverage situations to just get them some work. But I would be stunned if he got picked.
I mean, you got to remember, you got to put him on your big league roster all season. And he's not hurt, so you can't stash him on the injured list like Baltimore did with Santander. So I think it's unlikely that somebody takes him, but he is somebody that I would say I'm most concerned. Like, if somebody got taken, I would be probably the most upset
For
if we
sure. That's a
lost
good way
him.
of putting it. Yeah.
In terms of potential, I think that he has the highest potential of everybody available. There are several players that could also be taken that are really interesting in terms of pitchers. I'd say Tanner Burns stands out. He was a guy I think was a second round pick or third round pick when we drafted him. And he's kind of been, stuck in double A for the past two or three seasons, but last year he actually had a really good season at double A and was knocking on the door to get a late season promotion to triple A. I'm not 100% sure if he actually did get promoted. Let me see. And yeah, he was at double A all last season. And he had been at double A the year before, but last year he dropped his ERA down to 3.01. The whip dropped down from 135 to 126. Strikeouts, were right there at one per inning. Walks were a little high, but everything looked pretty good. Like, he's definitely ready to at least pitch triple A next year. And he was in 2020, yeah, he was a competitive balance pick, so he actually was a in-betweener first and second round guy, still just 24 years old. So that's definitely somebody that somebody could take a shot on. I would not be surprised if there's a team that needs some pitching, maybe takes a chance on Tanner Burns. The players you're most likely to lose though are relievers, and we have a few of those as well that are available. I'd say the most likely ones to lose are somebody like Mason Hickman, a former fifth round pick. I think the year of the 2020 draft. And he was a starter that got converted to a reliever. And the second he got converted to a reliever, he was really good. So I think he made it up to Triple A last year. So that's somebody that's at least got that experience close to the major league level. Thomas Ponticelli is somebody that I think throws in almost 100 miles an hour. So somebody could take a shot on him. Nick Mikolajczyk and Andrew Mysiasek are both guys that, when healthy, they were knocking on the door to be added to the 40-man roster or make the team and help them in the bullpen. But they both are recovering from Tommy John surgery, so I don't know if somebody's going to take a shot on them.
Mikolajczyk, I
So.
know, was in the conversation to open with the team last year out of camp. Had he had a good spring, but then he got hurt.
Yep, the him and yeah, him and Mysiasek both ended up getting Tommy John. So,
Yeah,
but they both were definitely, really intriguing bullpen arms.
Right, and like you said, relievers are usually pretty likely to be the guys that get picked because they're a lot easier to just stash on your roster,
That's what we did with
especially.
Stefan.
Exactly. If you re yeah, for those of you that don't remember, Stefan, he only pitched 40 some innings in 2021, despite being on the team the whole year. Francona used him super sparingly. It was more, let's keep him on the roster, make sure he gets his work, but we're not competing this year, so let's just let him kind of do his
Yeah.
thing.
And then 2022 was his breakout.
Exactly, and then he obviously gets an extension. I think he'll have a bounce back year, but that's not what we're on the air to talk about right now. But there are a couple position players worth talking about, particularly in the upper levels of the minors. I know you mentioned Daniel Schneemann and Micah Priess, as well as Aaron Brocho, as guys that could potentially be selected. Schneemann had a phenomenal start to the year at AAA. He was hitting like 350 midway through the year. Then he cooled off a little bit. I'm personally the founding member of Schneemann's Demons, the Daniel Schneemann fan club on Twitter. So I would personally be pretty devastated if we lost him in the Rule Five. But he seems like a guy that would be a team would have no issues taking him in the Rule Five, trying him out in camp, and then sending him back, I could imagine.
Yeah, he's definitely that super utility guy that, had a really strong offensive year for about two thirds of the year. So he was in Matt Schlichting's corner cupboard, so for most of the season. And
Yeah, Priess is another guy that's fairly interesting. So why don't you talk about his profile a little bit?
Yeah, Micah Priess is a guy that can play a little bit of first base, a little bit of outfield, can DH, a little bit of everything. He, I believe, is a left-handed hitter guy that, let me pull up his peripherals here.
Yeah,
But,
left-handed hitter, right-handed thrower, can play first, center, and left, according to Baseball Reference.
yeah, he was a 13th round pick by Cleveland in 2019. So he's 25 years old, 6'3". Got good size, and yeah, can play first base, outfield. And last year, I would say it was a bit of a down year because in 2022 he was terrific. Had basically hit 18 home runs, 73 RBIs at Double A, and then impressed in spring training last year in some opportunities that he had, and then he spent the entire 2023 season at AAA, where he slashed 232, 328, 424. He did set a career high in walks with 47 and dropped his strikeouts to 101. I'd say the biggest thing that happened with him, though, was I think he was dealing with some leg injuries a little bit. He was a little banged up, even though he played a lot. And it was most notable in the drop off in his stolen bases. As a big guy, 6'3", he went from 14 stolen bases with one caught stealing in 2021. Then in 2022, he had 20 stolen bases to four caught stealing. And last year, three stolen bases, four caught stealing. So hopefully, he's got that sorted out. But he is somebody I think that could get taken. It just depends. He didn't have a great season, so maybe that'll scare some teams off too.
It did. Now he seemed like, just looking at his like by month splits, he was pretty much just like up and down. Like it wasn't that he was like consistently a 230, 333, 444 guy across the way. I mean, he had a month of July where he was 320, 410, 750, and then seven home runs, which is that's scorching hot in 20 games. He had a really good start to the season too, with 280, 350, 470 triple slash in the month of April as well. But like you said, a guy that, coming off an injury, may be a guy that a team would take a flyer on. And again, I remember, this is going to be a wild reference, but in 2012, I think we picked a guy named Mike McDade, a first baseman from Texas. And he was a guy that like we picked in the Rule Five draft, and we just kept him around in camp and evaluated him. And just decided, hey, he's not someone that we want to mess around with, and just kind of sent him on his way. So that is kind of what I could envision happening, is you get a team that's maybe on the fringes, or maybe a little outside of contention, somewhere kind of like the A's, right? That just needs guys that would be
That's
happy to
what
take
happened. That's what happened with like Ka'ai Tom, you know. The A's took him and we never got him back. So
So, you never know. But I think it's fair to say that given that they kept, what was his name, Rivas on the 40 man, that's a spot that you could play with. I think any of the guys that they didn't protect, they're either fairly confident that they're not going to get picked and or wouldn't be devastated if they did get picked.
Yeah, the only other guy that I think has a decent shot of getting picked is Brian Labastida. He was a guy that made the 40 man out of spring training and started with the team, a year ago. And now, he's off the 40 man. He spent most of last year at Double A while Bo Naylor was getting all the reps at Triple A, and then he got promoted back to Triple A late in the season because he started playing really well. So, he's kind of bounced back and looks to be ready to play at the major league level compared to, when he kind of wasn't ready the first time they called him up. But he's also not on the 40 man. So if somebody needs some catching depth, Cleveland looks like they're looking to back up Bo Naylor with a veteran, not with another rookie. So I think that somebody could take a flyer on him. And go ahead.
I was gonna say, just with the amount of like catching turmoil we've had over the last couple of years, especially in that backup catcher slot, I'm surprised a guy like Brian Labastida hasn't gotten more of a shot. And the fact that they then didn't protect him just says that to me that the organization is fairly out on him. Whether or not they're right or wrong in that remains to be seen. But it seems like a guy that they just probably wouldn't be heartbroken if he got picked.
Yeah. I mean, there are several other players that are really interesting, but none of them made it to AAA. Most of them didn't even make it to AA. The most notable, I would say, is Aaron Brocco, who was once a top 10, round or a top 10 prospect in Cleveland system, had a really good bounce back year last year at AA after two terrible years at High A. So, he was one of those guys where they promoted him and he just had to succeed, and he did. He was one of Cleveland's better hitters last year at those lower levels. And then everybody else, though, they're really interesting, but they're just not – like, I think nobody played higher than High A. But Juan Benjamin, Mike Collado, Jose Devers, Dian Frias, who else? Jorge Burgos, Luis Durango, like all these guys are really, really interesting and young, but none of them, they're those guys that Cleveland signed at 16. They got affected by the COVID year, lost a year of development, and didn't like leap a level after that. So they just kind of been slowly progressing, and they're just not close enough yet that Cleveland felt the need to protect them. But all of those guys are interesting. So.
For sure.
I highly, highly doubt anybody takes a shot. I mean, Santander, I think, is an outlier, and he had a ridiculous season at High A the year that he got taken. He had never made it to Double A, but it was just kind of that perfect, terrible combination of great season, injured, terrible team taking him that can stash him. I don't think anybody else has that. That perfect combo to take any of those other young guys.
Yeah, and I think with Bracho, the one thing that I think about with him is, like you mentioned, with the pitchers who had actual prospect pedigrees attached to them at one point. We all remember that, what was it, that 2017 international class that had like Valera and Rocchio, and it was just insane. Bracho, I think, got the highest signing bonus of anybody in that class. So they were he clearly comes with some background of being like a sought after guy. So he seems like someone that we'd at least be weary of losing, I should say. Mm-hmm.
And he did have a good season last year. So I would be pretty upset if he did get taken, but I can understand not keeping him because he's kind of a second base only guy. We've already got that locked down. So. If he gets another opportunity somewhere else, I just root for him there.
And I'm fairly certain he gave up switch hitting this year, and that was kind of the
Yeah,
big thing with him.
he moved to right-handed only, I believe, and unlocked some power. So, and had some flashes of hitting for decent average too. Now for the season, he didn't hit for a very high average, but kind of sold out for power and played really well. So he was we kind of during the regular season we would track our top players of the week, where who had the highest like kind of OPS throughout the system throughout and over 2 week stretches, and he was a player of the week like three or four times. Like it was nuts.
Yeah. So definitely somebody to keep an eye on, but again, somebody that I think both you and I think it's safe to say, be pretty surprised if he got picked somewhere. Cool. So that I think about covers it for the Rule 5 stuff. Before we wrap up, I do want to pivot over to a couple of listener questions that we did get from the Twitter people. So keep an eye out, by the way, at Cover the Corner on Twitter. We'll occasionally troll you guys for some listener questions. So be on the lookout for that. We try to answer as many of them as we can. So feel free to ask on there. First one comes from Jeff at MTOFNern on Twitter. Jeff, I'm sorry if I butchered that. It says, if you could change the positions of a couple prospects, who would they be? So I think what he's asking here is if you've got a prospect that plays a position that you could move to another position just so they fit better in the org, who would be the guys that you think of there?
Number one for me by a landslide is Juan Brito, corner outfield.
Love it. Absolutely.
Like he is in shortstop hell right now. Had a great season last year. Split between high A and double A. Absolutely belongs. He's patient at the plate. He's got the potential for power. He's just not even close, I think, in terms of defensively what Cleveland's looking for at shortstop. So the sooner they transition him to a corner outfield position, the better, because I think, he's the kind of guy where the bat plays and he's athletic enough that he can do it. I mean, if it worked with like Nolan Jones, it could definitely work with a shortstop, because Jones was a third base prospect. So I mean, that guy, that would solve a lot of problems if he was a good corner outfield prospect instead of a good shortstop prospect that's behind five or six other good shortstop prospects.
Yeah, I think that's very well said, and I think I agree with everything you just said. Just to pick somebody different, I know he's technically not a prospect anymore, but I'd love to see Tyler Freeman be able to play some outfield. I'm a big Tyler Freeman guy. My name on Twitter has Tyler Freeman Truther in it. I just think the guy just produces everywhere he's been, and I'd love to see him, like you said, get out of the shortstop purgatory that we seem to be in with, like 25 guys vying for that spot. Center field, if he's athletic enough and can move a little bit, that seems like a spot that he could take to, but again, it's not exactly simple to just up and move positions like that. So Jeff again had another question, which was, who has a better chance of being guard developed? I'm guessing that means pitching factoried to the next level, Doug Nikhazy or Tommy Mace?
They're both interesting. I think Nikhazy was a second round pick the year we got Bibee and Gavin Williams, and Mace, if I'm not mistaken, was like a second round pick as well, like maybe a compensation pick or a competitive balance type pick. Like they were both upper level arms in the same draft, I believe.
Mace
And
was competitive balance B round. So this is the second round competitive balance compensation picks.
okay. And I would say Nikhazy, he has shown a little bit more flashes. Nikhazy had some good strikeout totals his debut season. He just wasn't quite getting getting outs like we were hoping, and he made it to double A by the end of the year. Had a I think a double digit strikeout performance or two his debut season, and then last year spent the whole season at double A. Mace struggled at high A and repeated there last year, but then had some really good stretches at high A and earned a promotion to double A. So I think they both finished the year at Double A, but Nikhazy spent the whole season there. So I would say Nikhazy's closer to making it to Cleveland, and he's also a lefty compared to Mace, who I believe is a righty. I just think Nikhazy has a little bit more, intrigue in terms of strikeout stuff, in terms of handedness of pitching, and he's one of those guys that's a bit of a psycho on the mound, not
Oh,
quite
he's James
Karinchak
Karinchak
level.
from the left
Yeah,
side.
exactly. Not quite Karinchak, but he's close. Like, if you watch some of his highlights in college, I mean, he is completely bananas out there. So, really emotional leader type of guy that you can rally behind.
Yeah,
And,
the big concern with him
without
is
the anti-vax stuff.
right. The big concern with him is he's been nearly a 7 walks per 9 guy in his minor league career. 11.3 strikeouts per nine, but I mean he's combined with 7 hits per 9, you can't be allowing 14 base runners per nine innings and make it very far in Major League Baseball.
That's why he didn't make it to Triple A last season. So, last year was a little bit of a down year, but I still think the potential's a little bit higher with him. But
Yeah.
Mace did come on strong at and he showed some flashes last season compared to, not showing much his debut year.
For sure. Now, an important note with the pitching development, and I agree with you. I think Nikhazy is the better prospect in general, and I think has a much higher ceiling. Developing command in pitching is really just a matter of developing repeatability and mechanics. And that is, if there's one thing the Guardians have like a signature of, it's an ability to get athletic guys who move well to repeat their delivery well. And I think Nikhazy is the type of guy that would just with the raw movement and deception and ability that he has on his pitches could be a guy that if they can get that walk rate down, he could be absolutely nasty. So I think Nikhazy is the clear answer. Next question is we got from Alyss at Alyss216 on Twitter. Do you think Manzardo starts the season in Cleveland, and do you think it's possible for DeLauder to make it to Cleveland next year?
I think Manzardo does start the year in Cleveland, and I think that he is a legitimate candidate for Rookie of the Year. And I do think that as long as DeLauder stays healthy with the performance he just put up in the AFL, if he keeps those kind of numbers going, even anything close to that, as he continues to progress at the minor league level, DeLauder is a legitimate candidate to get a late season promotion to Cleveland. He's going to start the year at Double A, I'm almost certain, but could have a short leash at Double A if with the way he's been hitting. Like, he was just as good as Manzardo, and Manzardo's a guy that is established Triple A, ready to play at major league level right now. And DeLauder was just as good. So I think he just needs to keep showing that he can do that. And yeah, DeLauder would not be shocked one bit if, again, stay healthy, earns a promotion to Cleveland at some point in 2023. It'll depend on health, on injuries at the Cleveland level, all that stuff. But outfield's our biggest need, and he is by far our most productive, interesting outfield prospect right now.
I agree on both counts 100%. I worry a little bit that they might try and pull some service time shenanigans with Manzardo. But I think the smart play is just let him open with the team and take his lumps and get into a groove. Now, one thing that is important to note for those of you who have not been scouring the Arizona Fall League Twitter account like I have, Chase DeLauder and Kyle Manzardo's bromance might be my new favorite thing in all of baseball. Those two guys appear to be absolute best friends, and I cannot wait to see them together in a Cleveland lineup. It's going to be so fun.
Yeah, no, these guys are the next big thing. They're, kind of the, I think they call them the Bash Brothers a little bit. So, and that's
Hey,
exactly what we need too.
I was going to say with our outfield last year and our power production, the word bash, and I'm sold. I'm sold. Next question, actually our last question is from BennyBoy962 on Twitter. Which position player and which pitcher do you think will lead the team in wins above replacement? So we agreed that we were going to challenge each ourselves to go with somebody other than Jose Ramirez for the pitching for the position player, because that's the obvious answer. So Brian, you had one, so why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, I'm going to go Josh Naylor. I mean, when he was healthy this year, he was just as good as Jose Ramirez. Had a set a career high in RBIs again, garbage stat. But when you got Jose Ramirez getting walked, leading the league in intentional walks in front of you, if you're going to keep knocking him in, that's going to make force people to pitch to Jose. So I think when healthy, Josh Naylor is elite.
Yeah,
And
Manzardo protected him on the other side too.
yeah. That'd be sick. It'd just be so sick. So, yeah, I want to see a full season of healthy Josh Naylor and what he can do, because he's still got more potential for power. I mean, he's hitting for contact. He's not striking out a lot. He was knocking in a lot of runs, just really hitting the ball well. So he knocks a few more out of the park. I think that he kind of transitions from somebody that can protect to Jose to somebody that needs it, somebody protecting him.
Absolutely. I'm going to go with Andrés Giménez. He's a guy that just by the nature of his base running ability and his defense is going to stuff the WAR stat sheet pretty easily, right? Like he had a down year this year, and I think he was what, still like a 3, 3.5 WAR guy, wasn't he?
And still won the platinum glove.
Won the Platinum Glove. And I don't know if everybody remembers correctly because it was a month amidst the dark times this season in August and September, but Andrés Giménez had an absolutely scorching end to the season. He was on fire for as rough as most of his year was this year. He started out really slow, just felt like he couldn't get it going. He hit 333, 369, 490 with 3 home runs, 4 doubles, 8 stolen bases in the month of September. Just absolutely tore the cover off the ball to end the season. So not to say that the 2022 Andrés Giménez is all the way back yet, but look for him to have a major, major bounce back season next year. And he's the guy that could be, all of a sudden you look up and he's in the All-Star game again.
Yeah, had 30 steals too. So, definitely not somebody you want to sleep on. I'm keeping him as my in my keeper league. So
Hey, I don't blame you. So for pitchers, I'm gonna go with Tanner Bibee. Some of that is I think Bibee's unbelievable. I've been high on him for a while, and it was really funny. Pitching Ninja posted a one of those silhouette videos of just like guess whose mechanics these are, and it was Verlander, and everybody kept guessing Tanner Bibee, which there's something there, something to be said for that. But apart from how good I think Tanner Bibee is, I'm not counting on Shane Bieber as a member of our rotation next year, whether that be health and or a trade. And I would be shocked if Tristan McKenzie throws more than 120 or so innings next year. So which means Bibee is, for all intents and purposes, your ace. And quite frankly, he pitched like it down the stretch this year. So that's my pick.
Yeah, and if I was fully confident he was healthy and ready to roll, I would have said Tristan McKenzie. He was arguably our best pitcher in 2022, the season that, we had a surprise run to the playoffs. He pitched well in the playoffs too. And I probably would have said Bibee, so I'm gonna just go Gavin Williams. I mean, he was really impressive last year as well. Not quite on the Tanner Bibee level, but he does have that, first round pick pedigree, that elite velocity, elite strikeout stuff. So if he can kind of take a leap next year, that's something that I think would be really, really impressive that the team can rely on down the stretch. So yeah, that Bibee Williams combo, 1-2 punch is going to be nasty for quite a few years here.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's amazing. They can't keep getting away with it, churning out pitchers like this, can they?
No, and there's more coming.
There are. I do want to end with one kind of question that I had kind of thought of. Every year it seems like there's a guy that comes out of nowhere in the system and just kind of rockets his way up. A couple years ago it was Stephen Kwan. Last year I know he got some prospect hype towards the end of the offseason, but Tanner Bibee skyrocketed, so did Logan Allen. Who would be your guy this year to keep an eye on to, hey, all of a sudden in the off season and talking about him at the beginning of the year is the guy to watch, the sleeper pick?
Okay. I'm going to go with somebody that I'm thinking people forgot about. And his name is Justin Campbell. He was, I think, our second round pick in the 2022 draft. He was supposed to start last year and ended up missing the whole season with a surgery to repair some like nerve issue in his elbow. So it's not like he had a tendon fixed. So it's not like he's coming back from Tommy John or anything. And he was a guy that's like 6'6", throws like in the upper 90s, like just all that same pedigree of all of our elite arms that we've developed into really good starters lately. And he just hasn't had that chance yet. So I'm hoping that if he's healthy, he's somebody that establishes himself as one of our next great pitching prospects.
Love it. I'm going to go with a guy on the opposite end of the spectrum. You know, a little less loud physical tools, more of a guy that just kind of all he's ever done at every single level is produce and produce at a high level. And that's Will Dion. He kind of walked away from the Kershaw imitation a little bit towards the end of the year, had more of a traditional pitching windup, but he is just consistently produced elite numbers at every level he's been at. Now it's hard for you to make it as a left-handed pitcher, only throwing what 89, 90 on a good day.
I think topping out in the lower 90s right now, so.
But he's got a career 2.14 ERA across 47 minor league starts, 256 innings, with 307 strikeouts in those innings. So clearly he can get guys out. So I'm thinking he's a guy that, you know, might crack the rotation next year. That's going to be the flag I'm planting in the ground, that he gets a couple spot starts down the stretch. That's going to be my bold call.
He did finish last year as Cleveland's lowest ERA among all qualified minor league starting pitchers. So, you know, I was kind of hyping up Ryan Webb, but it was actually Will Dion, and advanced to double A and continued to pitch well at double A. So he probably starts the year at triple A and is knocking on the door for the major leagues if he can continue performing and producing.
Yep, I do think there's a couple guys in front of him for the rotation for sure, but I
Cantillo,
definitely
Espino,
he's definitely a name to watch for me. All right, Brian. Well, hey, thanks for your time. Thanks for coming on, and we love talking prospects with you guys. Join us. We'll be keeping you guys updated throughout the off season. We don't typically do these a little more sporadically. I do know that we'll have our Covering the Corner prospect countdown coming up a little bit closer to spring training. That usually starts what, late January?
Late January and then takes up the entire month of February, pretty much.
Cool. So be on the lookout for that. I mean, we're getting to be about, what, 2 months away at this point. So, anyway, Brian, have a great weekend, and we'll see you guys next time.